You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. Well, guys, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know things are bad right now. You've watched the games. You've seen them just like I have. The latest, the Orioles lost 6-1 to the Astros in the first game of that three-game series, and it was not a competitive game at all. Chris Tillman didn't look good. The offense didn't look good. And things only get worse from here on out. We've got to face Justin Verlander and Dallas Keuchel in the next two games. So there's a very real chance the Orioles are going to start the season 1-5 and then have to play the Yankees for a four-game series. It's hard to pinpoint what exactly is wrong right now because everything is wrong right now. We knew that the starting pitching was going to be an issue, and it has been except for Dylan Bundy. But I think more concerning than that, to me at least, is just how bad the offense has been. The Orioles have managed only 3 runs in their last 3 games. They've been outscored 19-3. They have the worst run differential in all of baseball at negative 15. They haven't scored against a starting pitcher in 27 innings this year so far. And they haven't scored against a starting pitcher in 46 straight innings going back to last season. The Orioles are last in basically every offensive category in baseball. Yes, things are very, very ugly right now. One thing we know for sure, though, is that the Orioles are not going to start the year 0-21 like they did 30 years ago. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to look back at the 1988 season in which the Orioles started the year 0-21. Joining me to talk about that infamous season is Matt Taylor, who is the founder of RoarFrom34.com. So let's get on to that because, frankly, talking about the 2018 Orioles isn't a lot of fun right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Matt Taylor, who is the founder of the Orioles blog RoarFrom34. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks. I'm a pleasure to be here.
This year marks the 30th anniversary of 1988, which was the year the Orioles started the year 0-21, which obviously not something anybody wants to look back on too fondly, but it is a significant year in Orioles history. Let me just ask you, Matt, I'm not sure exactly how old you are, but were you alive in 1988?
I was. I was a middle school student at the time. And so I can remember one of my middle school teachers, in fact, being a big Orioles fan and talking to us pretty much every day through the losing streak about this team and how they were doing. And I guess there was the famous Sun headline, which, you know, I don't know what number of losses they were at the time, but say it was 14. It was like, Orioles is the headline, but starting with O-O-O with all 14 of the O's in there.
Right. And of course, there's the famous Sports Illustrated issues as well that had was Billy Ripken on the cover. And I think it's like the agony of the Orioles or something like that. And that's when they were at 0-18. So, of course, it would go on 3 more games after that. I was a sophomore in college when this happened. So I was in the second semester of my sophomore year of college. And remember it well, just, you know, every day hoping that it was going to end. I was in college and had a lot of other things going on at the time. Baseball probably wasn't my top priority then, but I was still, you know, a long time Orioles fan and was still really not enjoying it. I'll put you that way.
Sure. And I can't imagine, honestly, being in college during that time because, you know, I went to college in New Jersey and that was, I was in college during the kind of a peak in the Orioles-Yankees rivalry that the Yankees were winning. So that was Jeffrey Mayer and then the 97 team. And so that really hardened my Orioles loyalties, but also was a very challenging experience where I had a lot of anger during that time being around a bunch of Yankees fans. But so I can't imagine 0-21 in college. That would have been miserable.
Yeah, my college years coincided with really bad Orioles baseball. Like, I was in college from 1986 to 1990. They didn't finish above 500 the entire time I was in college.
Wow.
And, of course, had that 0-21 start. Just a lot of bad baseball, and then didn't have another really good year until 92. So it's interesting because as I was growing up, I figured this out one time. The first time the Orioles finished below 500 in my lifetime was actually that year, my freshman year in college. So from the time I was born in 1968 until I was in, you know, a senior in high school, 1985-86, the Orioles had always finished above 500. So it was really kind of a culture shock when they kind of went downhill so fast in those years. But it was a time that it was
it was easy to lose interest in baseball because, you know, in college there's so much else going on. But yeah, it wasn't fun at all. So now you went back and researched this a little bit because, you know, obviously the beginning of the 1988 season was when this happened. And you found a couple of fun things that were kind of, well, I don't know if fun is the word, but you found a couple of things that were going on at the time. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, I got interested in this and just kind of it occurred to me like, oh, wow, we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of this start. And so I became curious about what was going on at the time. What was the thinking? What were kind of the headlines? And, you know, there certainly wasn't an expectation outside of, you know, some optimism expressed by maybe Cal Ripken Sr. about how they might do that season. And I think most people were realistic that this wasn't a team that was going to win at all. But certainly I don't think foresaw what was coming. And so some of the things that actually were more in the headlines at that time. You had very much a situation where things were up in the air with the Orioles in Baltimore. You know, I think ever since, I guess it was Edward Bennett Williams was the owner at the time. And, you know, he was a DC guy and he was the one that, you know, as it became an issue many years later, but he was the one that took Baltimore off of the road uniforms and put Orioles on there. And so, you know, you're coming off also Baltimore losing the Colts in 84. And so now there's this concern that you know, could, you know, Baltimore lose the Orioles and potentially even worse, lose them to D.C.? And so there was an exhibition game that the Orioles played in D.C. that was well attended prior to the season. And, you know, there was a commission that was looking to move a team to D.C. And, you know, they were boasting about the attendance there and they were already – you know, had a mechanism for demonstrating buy-in on season tickets. So you have concern about the team possibly moving, and then, you know, you have DC that's, you know, making this push for baseball and a concern about could the Orioles end up there. And then one of the things that I hadn't known that was really interesting to look back and see was that, you know, there was talk of Dave Winfield from the Yankees being traded to the Orioles in a deal for Fred Lynn, kind of a swap of aging superstars. And you know, Steinbrenner, being the owner of the Yankees at the time, was insisting that he could do this, even though Winfield had 10-5 rights. He had had it written in the contract each year, seven teams that Winfield would, you know, would consider a trade to, and the Orioles were on that list. And so Steinbrenner was kind of hanging on that, saying, yeah, he's got these rights, but we can trade him because of this clause in the contract. And so here you're leading up to opening day with the possibility of Dave Winfield coming to Baltimore, which was interesting. Of course, that never happened, and, you know, he did wind up being traded later in the season, but obviously not to the Orioles. But just some interesting things going on overall, and wrapped up in all of that and the concern about where the Orioles would end up. Early in the season, there was the negotiations over a stadium deal with the Memorial Stadium that, you know, by the end of this losing streak turned into them announcing that a deal had officially been reached. And, you know, that was the beginning of Camden Yards there. So a really interesting time actually in Orioles history within that context, where there's a lot more going on than just the 0-21.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is interesting to look back on it. And I was really fascinated by the, you know, Fred Lynn for Dave Winfield trade rumor, because for a couple of reasons, one of which it's like it's hard to even remember Fred Lynn on the Orioles. That's kind of a weird, you know, again, it was a weird time in Orioles history. And I mean, I know that he was on the Orioles, but it's not a period that's really etched in my brain very much. You know, it just kind of still seems weird that he was even on the Orioles. And that would have been a really interesting trade. I think the Orioles probably would have got the better of that deal, because Winfield still had, you know, several productive years ahead of him at that point, and I don't think Lynn really did. I'd have to go back and look when Fred Lynn's career actually ended, but I know it was several years before Winfield's ended, so that would have been an interesting deal for the Orioles. Not that it would have made too much difference, but it would have given them three future Hall of Famers in the middle of the lineup instead of the two they actually had. And that's another really interesting point, I think, about that Orioles team that's kind of weird to look back on, is that, you know, that team had Cal Ripken Jr. and Eddie Murray on their team, both of, you know, more or less in their primes, you know, or, you know, maybe just past it in Murray's case. And even so, they started the season 0-21, which tells you something about the talent level around them. It was a really, the pitching on that team was awful, which is something I think you know, we can relate to in 2018 pretty well. But it's fascinating to look back because not many teams that are that bad have two Hall of Famers right in the middle of the lineup, you know, still in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly takes a really unique set of circumstances to go 0-21, and particularly when you've got a couple of Hall of Famers in the lineup. And so it is such an interesting story. And I was looking back after I wrote that post at John Eisenberg, who used to write for The Sun, has an oral history of the Orioles. So there's a chapter in there on 0-21. And so it's interesting to go through there and read from the player's perspective what was going on. And it was like if anything could go wrong, it did. You know, like one night you're hitting the ball, but the pitching's, you know, terrible and gives up more runs. You know, next night you can't hit the ball. And then it's all number of base running errors and losing the ball in the lights and all sorts of just kind of freak occurrences that, you know, make this 0-21 come about, which is seems so unlikely, you know, then at the time. And then I think even looking back in context to think, how did they do this? And, you know, back in, I guess it was about 2010, when the Astros were kind of in their phase of tanking, and they had started the season, initially started 0-7. They wound up going 0-8 to start the season. But after they were 0-7, I'd read an article at the time and referenced it on my blog, where there was an early comparison being made to, you know, could this team be as bad as those Orioles, and could they, you know, come anywhere near that 0-21? And I found myself in a strange spot where all of a sudden the 0-21 became a point of pride. And I'm writing about this and saying, well, of course they're not, you know, these 88 Orioles, and just a very strange situation to be writing almost nostalgically about such a bad team. Now, you know, the Astros only lost 8 to open the season that year, and they wound up only losing 86 games versus the 107 that the Orioles lost. But really, it does. It takes such a unique set of factors to even make it possible.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A couple of things you brought up there. One is, yeah, it's tough to lose 21 straight games at any point in the season, right? I mean, never mind the beginning of the season. I mean, I've never heard of anything else like that. I mean, even for a bad, bad team, and like some of those Astros teams were really bad. The 2010 team wasn't even the worst of them. There were some really awful Astros teams for a few years there, we know, that lost, you know, 110 games a couple of times. And none of them came anywhere close to losing 21 straight games. It's just tough in the game of baseball to lose 21 straight. So that is, again, like one of the reasons it's so unique and so interesting. And the other thing you talked about, the kind of the perverse sense of pride, I definitely know what you mean by that, because it's like, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, it's not something you ever want to be a part of again. But, you know, it's part of their history. It's part of the Orioles' history. The way that, you know, the 62 Mets, maybe Mets fans take some pride in that team that lost 20 games, because, you know, again, it's just part of who you are. It's part of your identity as a team. And for the Orioles, you know, you kind of got to, you take the good and the bad with when you have a team history. And it is something, nobody else has that, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things for me, especially looking back on it and doing some reading about it, you know, you had mentioned here at the outset about, you know, that time period being really when you were experiencing kind of sub 500 baseball for the first time. And I think that context is so important because, you know, you look at so much of the, like the color that was going on around the time and all this fun stuff that was happening to try and end the losing streak. You know, Bob Rivers, a DJ who's, you know, say, I'm going to stay on the air until they win, and winds up being on air for about 11 days. And I had forgotten Stan the Fan, a local personality. He said he wore curlers and a muumuu to do his broadcast one day, dressed in drag to show what a drag losing was, and just all this color around the team. But I think there's also the context of this was such a successful franchise in the time leading up to this. I mean, you're talking about 13 straight winning seasons between 1968 and 1980. You know, their highest win percentage in any decade came in the 70s. You know, they had 6 World Series appearances between 66 and 83, and then, of course, the 83 World Series. So there was so much goodwill, so much winning, that, you know, being the punchline, having fun of it was probably easier than it would be today, where, you know, you have the streak of 14 losing seasons and a lot more cynicism around the team, even when they're winning. You know, even in the recent run where they've done so well, there's still so much cynicism surrounding the team and so little goodwill in comparison. So I think that context is important. And that really comes to a head where you see they had their fantastic fan night, I guess, coming back in May. They're about 1-23. And you know, they have a fantastic fan night where more than 50,000 people show up, you know, at Memorial Stadium to cheer the team in that game. And I mean, you couldn't fit 50,000 people into Camden Yards. I think Camden Yards tops out about 46, 47,000. And they had had their largest, to that point, what was their largest regular season home crowd for opening day that year. So they had 52,000. So you're talking about a real love affair with the team, a team that had won for so much that, you know, I think that probably made it a little bit easier to have humor about it and to look at it as a, you know, something looking back as a fun period, a part of their history. Versus now, there seems to be so little of that goodwill that were it to happen today, I can't imagine, you know, what the response would be. It certainly wouldn't be good humor.
Yeah, it's true. When I was growing up, there were two franchises that were considered sort of the model franchises in baseball, and that was the Dodgers and the Orioles. And I know it's like when you say the Orioles were considered a model franchise, people who are, you know, born alive in the 70s and 80s find that hard to believe. But it's true. Like you said, they were a winning team every year. You know, they won 90 games regularly under Earl Weaver. Even years that they didn't win the division, they were, you know, typically winning 90 games or high 80s. They were a contender every year. They were always in it. They always produced. Their farm system was great. I mean, the number of, you know, top line major leaguers they produced from the late 60s through the early 80s is, you know, it's a who's who of all stars, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just a complete opposite situation of what we have now, where, you know, the Orioles are lucky to produce a decent major leaguer every couple of years. It's a very different situation indeed. One thing I did want to ask you about too was, and this is something that at the time I remember being somewhat controversial and still controversial, is after the Orioles finally broke the 21-game losing streak, they actually cracked open champagne and celebrated as if they had just, like, won the division or something. And I know that didn't set well with everybody at the time. And I think, again, like I said, to this day, I think some people don't know about it. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. What do you think about that? Was that the right thing to do?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a reference to that. You know, I mentioned John Eisenberg's book and talking about that time period. And he mentions the champagne being there, but he talks about it in a way of, you know, a lot of players saying, we're not going to celebrate. There's nothing to celebrate here. So, you know, the full degree of that, I'm not sure, but you know, you could see it either way. I mean, it could be good humor about the whole thing, about it finally being over and kind of having a laugh at yourself with that sort of thing. Certainly nowadays, I think particularly with, you know, power of social media and commentary on that, there'd be a lot of negative pushback about not wanting to win or not taking the game seriously or that sort of thing. But it seems to me that the general atmosphere in the clubhouse toward the end of that streak sounded like it was pretty poor. You know, that you had Eddie Murray in his last season before being traded and had some battles with the press and you know, the front office, you know, putting some things out there in terms of negative stories. And, you know, you hear as they got further into the losing streak of players losing their cool a little bit in the clubhouse. So it seems like it would be a really hard sell to make that into a fun thing overall. But, you know, personally, I don't have a problem with it. Again, that's probably more of the nostalgic fun look at it. You know, I get the idea that you want to win and you shouldn't be celebrating after such a, you know, a terrible streak and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I think at that point, anything to lighten the mood after such a miserable start. So I personally wouldn't have a problem with it, but I could see absolutely why people would, including some of the players themselves. And I'm sure, you know, nowadays there'd be a ton of negative pushback on that.
Yeah, you make a really good point that in the age of social media and Twitter, that would have been a whole different. I mean, I can't even imagine the reaction on Twitter to something like that. I mean, people get bent out of shape over nothing. That would have been really, really a lot of pushback and people calling them all sorts of names and that we can't repeat on a family podcast, but it would have been ugly for sure.
Absolutely.
Final point I wanted to make, and this is something I tweeted a couple days ago, and I think I tweeted something similar last year too. As we know, the Orioles have now won opening day, I think it's 8 straight years. It's every year that Buck Showalter has been there on opening day, I believe. And the thing that I tweeted the other day, which was, I really firmly believe, is that having lived through 0-21 and remembering that season, you know, I never take an opening day win for granted. You know what I mean? It's like anytime you win that first game, at the very least, you're not going to be 0-21 to start the season. And so I think it really is like, while it's fun to look back on it in some ways and it kind of does have some nostalgia value, it really is not fun as a fan to go through that. And I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from it, is that I certainly would never want to go through that as a fan again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly right. It's fun. It's fun in hindsight. It makes for a good story, but it's not something you'd want to experience. I think you'd lose, a lot of your fans even before you even got to 21. And that really came through in looking back, at the coverage at the time and what the players were saying and that sort of thing, is that, that a lot of them will acknowledge in hindsight, like, yeah, this seems like a fun thing, but it was miserable to go through. They weren't having fun with this. And there's a famous little anecdote where I think after they lost their 19th game, President Ronald Reagan called, manager Frank Robinson, and at some point in the conversation said, I know what you're going through. And Robinson responded, no, you don't. And so I think it was a lot tougher for the players. I think as a fan too, like, sure, it's easy to kind of have fun with it now. And you realize in the context of just life and everything, it's baseball season. It's not that big of a deal, but I wouldn't want to go through it again. I don't think that the Orioles could weather a start like that again without, really doing significant lasting damage to the fan base.
Yeah, I agree with you for sure. All right, well, Matt, if people want to find Roar from 34, where can they find it?
The website is roarfrom34.com, and then I'm also active on Twitter at roarfrom34.
All right, well, thanks a lot for being here, Matt. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.